Alexander also began to visit the different capitals. And he, when he was in Susa in 324, he led a mass marriage ceremony that joined Macedonian and Persian elite families. He married Barsine, a relative of Darius III, taking her as his second wife. And 80 of his companions married the daughters of Persian and Median nobles. In addition to the upper crust of Persian and Macedonian elite being involved in this ceremony, there was a total of 10,000 couples who were joined in this, what must have been a very impressive banquet. Alexander distributed presents to the couples. Perhaps these were incentives for Macedonian and Greek soldiers to take Persian wives. Our sources note that this was the most popular thing that Alexander ever did. However, after Alexander's death, his generals, those members of the Macedonian elite that he had encouraged to marry Persian women, renounced the marriages to a man. When Alexander and his court arrived in Babylon in 323, he discovered that the astrologers and priests had noted many omens that predicted harm would come to the king. He was warned to stay away, or if he would not leave the city, to install a substitute king to suffer the evils that were prophesied. One day, Alexander came into the palace and found a young man seated on the throne, wearing his royal diadem and robes. When questioned, Alexander discovered that the man was a criminal who had been brought from Babylon. Now, this is very reminiscent of the practice of putting a substitute king on the throne when there was some evil omen that had been predicted. We saw Nabonidus did this, for example. But Alexander may have thought that this was an attempt to overthrow him. We don't ever find out what happened to the man who sat on Alexander's throne. We get some sense of how oppressive it would be for a ruler to be surrounded by these doomsayers. Plutarch writes that Alexander had become so much obsessed by his fears of the supernatural and so overwrought that he interpreted every strange or unusual occurrence, no matter how trivial, as a portent, with the result that the palace was filled with sacrificers, purifiers, and prognosticators. Alexander fell ill at a banquet in early June after many hours of drinking. His final illness, we're not sure exactly what it was. There have been many, many theories proposed, perhaps malaria. Perhaps his body was just worn out after a life of very hard living and hard drinking. His illness lasted about 10 days, and he died on the 10th of June in 323 BC. He left no successor, and his Macedonian generals split the empire into smaller kingdoms. So no one would ever create an empire that reached the extent of the Persian Empire or that lasted as long as the Persian Empire. The legacy of Alexander drew the interest of writers in the East as well as in the West, and they varied their perspective. Sometimes he was described as a destructive enemy by Eastern writers, but often he was represented as a hero. In the next lecture, we will survey the later empires that controlled Mesopotamia. At times, they drew on the ancient past of the region, and we will see how they interpreted and even incorporated some of the ruins that marked the landscape between the Tigris and the Euphrates rivers.